This is the Volleyball Coaching Wizards podcast, covering everything coaching, motivated and inspired by interviews and conversations with some of the world's great volleyball coaches. To learn more about the project, visit volleyballcoachingwizards.com. Now here are your hosts, John Foreman and Mark Levigeau.
Welcome to episode 2 of the podcast. This time we'll be talking about the development of a coaching staff, as discussed in the interview of Vital Heinen. Vital is currently the German national team men's coach, who won the bronze medal at the World Championships in 2014. As a professional coach at the club level, he's won 4 league titles, 5 cups, and 4 super cups in Belgium, won 2 CEV cup medals. He's also coached in Poland and Turkey, and was a professional player in his own right for several years. So here's what Vital has to say, and then Mark and I will kind of follow on.
You mentioned before that you like to delegate to at least the conditioning coach, the strength coach. What's your philosophy about the different staff members and how you work with them?
That's too difficult because you can judge me, Mark. And that way, you were working with me like a couple of months. Of course, I like that staff members are having own responsibilities and can do things. But on the other hand, I know that people see me and also staff see me as a guy who wants to know everything. Mm-hmm. And so there's a bit contradiction. I like to give away. I feel it's giving away, but for some guys, of course, it will not be enough. At the end, I have to be fair, I always want to know what's going on. In that way, I think my staff can have the feeling they can do some things, but I will not leave it completely alone.
Yep.
That's true. I will always have like a half eye on it and go in and talk and do so there. But I think it's very important about it's about staff. For me, it's important is that you find people around you who know more than me, who know somewhere more than me. That's for me very crucial.
Yeah.
I don't want a copy behind me. I want a guy who can be used as a mirror. I can talk to, and he can give a reflection about the things we are doing.
Yeah.
So the guys and staff has to have a quality I don't have, and that can be on different aspects. Can be on knowing the game. Can be on scouting. Can be on physical training. Can be on physio. But they have to be better than I am. Otherwise, there's no sense. Otherwise, I will do it. And then it's also easier for me sometimes to give things away if I know they are clearly better than I.
Yeah.
And I'm naive. I think I'm naive. I love it to say it and also to do it, like give it away and we will see where we end. I love to get very good and had the luck in the German national team to have fantastic assistant or second coach or how you know that guys around me to help me and give me a better view of the team. I think you're one of them. I had Santilli last year. I have Roberto Piazza now. I had Stefan Hübner there. So it's a group of guys who can tell me something I don't know. And that's my meaning about the staff. They have to tell you something different. The most important I forgot is they have to be honest.
Mm-hmm.
That is a starting point who's even more important. You need people around you trust. If you have to ask yourself every time a staff member is doing something that he will do something against you or against the team, then kick him out. I was doing this in Poland. If you have the feeling the guy was not really behind me, then you said to the guy, take your bag and go home. I don't need you here.
Yeah.
I think that has to be to be honest or to be open. You don't have to be the same opinion. On the other, completely different. A staff member can have a totally different opinion. It's no problem. But you have to be honest and tell it to me, his different opinion, and not to others. And I think there the staff is, it's very important to have a good view of the things. If everybody can have a different opinion, you can make a nice meeting.
Yeah.
Guys coming a lot out. I don't want guys just running behind me and just imitating or saying yes, that I don't like. But it becomes difficult. It's something I feel that if you are some lucky to win some games, that people are not so honest anymore. I feel it's not easy. That's why I'm happy when I can find a real good coach next to me, because they have mostly the confidence to tell something different.
Yeah.
Yeah. And if the coach are not so experienced or not so famous, they will always be like, oh, take care with this coach. Oh, it's not easy to find good stuff. It's not so easy.
But your it's not so common for, in volleyball anyway, for a coach at your level to deliberately work with guys who are experienced head coaches, for example. That's not something that you see a lot of. If you look at the NBA, then it's common in the NBA, for example, but in volleyball, you hardly ever see it. Assistants are assistants, and head coaches are head coaches.
I think the beginning of our conversation was telling that I was thinking to be the coach who is clearly different. it's a funny story. I agree with that. You know that when I took you last then, because you were in Berlin and it was a bit half logical that I could take you as an assistant coach.
Yes, yes.
Because you were the head coach of the champion of Germany. But when I took Roberto Santilli, the federation was first not so positive.
Yeah.
Because they thought two head coaches next to each other, it will only give problems. And suppose that the second coach is better than the first, then we have an even bigger problem. Huh? And so in that way, they were afraid, but they are conservative. Huh? And I think that afterward, and with you, and with Roberto Santilli, and now with Bielsa, it's only showing that we have more quality in the staff. Huh? If you talk about a concept, I was selling the concept to my players in the World Championship that we have the best staff of all the world.
Mm-hmm.
I think the players were buying this. They were believing very strongly in what we are doing, the coaches, I think. And that's important, that you can sell your product and the players may believe in something like, no, we are always best prepared for every game.
Yeah.
So in that way, I think it's good to have good coaches if you put in the right package. And on the day, I told the Germans on the question, yeah, but what if the second coach is better? I said, no problem. I step back and I will go home. If there's a better coach for the team, I'm happy to do the best that what's possible to give the coach to give the team a better coach.
Yeah.
It's not me. I have to work harder and get better and go home and work. So there, I'm not. I think it's this naivety to be open to everybody who learned me so much, and sometimes I will maybe get problems with it. But I can only thank all the people around me, like helping me and telling me so many things that I will not change it. That I will not change. I will always look for people who can help me.
Yeah, so that clip from Vital is, for me, one of the most interesting points that came out of his interview, from a lot of interesting points, I have to say. And the idea that the staff member should, I guess it's a common thing for people to say that a staff member needs to bring something extra to the table, but I like the way that Vital specifically said that he has to know something that I, the coach, don't know. And while that's, in a sense, a really obvious thing, it's something that in practice is really difficult to manage, because people, as a general rule, don't like to be challenged on a daily basis and don't seek it out, because it can be, as I said, it can be challenging. It makes you think. It keeps you on your toes, and perhaps that's one of the things that distinguishes good, great coaches from mediocre ones, is that ability to not only allow themselves to be pushed, but to seek out situations in which they're uncomfortable.
Right. Now, we've both been an assistant coach at various stages. Has that feature, anything like that, featured in to have your experience as an assistant? Have your head coaches actively sought out you to push them or to challenge them or whatever?
Maybe it's my experience as an assistant that makes that comment such an interesting one. So I've worked with Vital in that context as his assistant, and he's correct. He doesn't shy away from any kind of conversation, and he's I guess he's human, so he's not always happy about it. But it's been interesting to me that he worked with me 1 year, and then in each subsequent year, he's gone out and sought somebody who's a head coach like me, not just an assistant, a career assistant, for example, but somebody who's a head coach and who brings those things directly to the table. And I've worked with assistant coaches in different contexts before where it's been the exact opposite. And coaches who don't want to be challenged, who don't want to be questioned, who have their system, have a system, and there's nothing that that can be done to improve that system. And as an assistant, that's just about the worst possible working environment. But the best one is one where your input is valued. And of course, the assistant has to understand the head coach makes the final decisions and won't always be the decision that you want him to make, but it's a much better working environment, and it's a much better environment for success, for improvement, for performance, is where you're always pushing and searching for new ways.
Yeah, I can definitely relate to that, because there was a year where I was working for a coach where, I was the new person on the staff, I was lowest on the totem pole, but I was never involved in any of the planning that went into trainings. I was basically there just to execute, which just drove me completely crazy, because I had come out of a situation where the coach that I had worked for actively involved me in a lot of things, and actively had me plan out training sessions myself to be executed in training that the two of us were going to run. I mean, sometimes I had to run them myself, but even when the two of us were going to be running the sessions, she would have me do it. So going from that to not being involved in anything but serving and hitting balls and, you know, tossing and things like that was just, I felt like I ran into a brick wall in terms of my own development. I mean, yeah, sure, I could watch and observe and we could talk about things, but it seemed like every time it came down to practicing, you know, to set up the structure of that day's training, it was, John, can you go make sure the nets are set up, or John, can you go do this or that, or something, you know, menial tasks. Just drove me completely insane. But at the same time, the other side of it is, as a coach, there were times when I definitely felt myself pressing probably more than I should have. and I can even think of times, you know, where I had words coming out of my mouth, and I'm saying to myself, why am I challenging this so hard right now? It's not that big a deal. But fortunately, at that point, I was working with a coach where we were much more of a partnership than head coach, assistant coach, in kind of the more traditional sort of way.
I think that's a characteristic of younger coaches, and younger assistant coaches especially want to, they think they're right, because all young coaches think they're right, and perhaps push unnecessarily. And I know that when I was a young assistant coach, I was exactly like that, but I had the good fortune to be working with Stelio De Rocco, another one of our interviews, who firstly wasn't personally challenged by it, which is a difficult thing to do, and secondly was able to guide me in the right direction and never discouraged me from having opinions, but at the same time, again, making sure that that he had the final say, and of course he never did anything that he didn't want to do, but I always felt that my input was valued, and the same with Vital, working with him, that those things are I mean, it's a much better working environment for everybody. And I think that from a performance point of view, if you don't have that environment, and it doesn't have to be with an assistant, it can be with a mentor, it can be with a member of the management, that environment where ideas are challenged, where systems are challenged, then you'd never, you don't have the same possibility to reach high goals, to have continual improvement. In some moment, sooner probably rather than later, performance will plateau, and it's, you win some personal, some comfort at a personal level, but you lose the opportunity to improve.
Right. Now you've been a head coach, and you've obviously been in a position to hire assistants. Well, first question, and this is more of a kind of a general question. When you're in a professional situation, as you are now, as you have been, how much influence do you actually have on who is your assistant on the staff? Whereas, I mean, I know in a case like an NCAA program, the head coach is basically responsible for hiring the assistant coaches. But the impression that I get on the European professional stage is that sometimes the assistant coaches are, let's say, hired by the club or part of the club, coach a lower team or something along those lines. So how much say do you actually get?
Nearly always there's a right of veto, but not always very much beyond that, and there are obvious limits. One is a budgetary financial limit that most clubs, most teams don't save a lot of budget room for an assistant. It's not the last brick chosen, put into the wall, but it's one of the last budgetary areas, and so there are those two things. The third one that's perhaps more important is that in most places in the world, the US being an exception, perhaps Italy being an exception, there is no career path, or coaching is not a profession, and so there's no career path for assistant coaches. So it's not that you can advertise, you can make calls, have seven applicants, and choose the that you're most comfortable with or the best one. Coaches are rarely full time. They're not rarely professionals, and you're nearly always limited to the people who live within 20 kilometres, who are still studying, or who perhaps are working with the juniors or in some other function. So there's not the freedom to search widely for assistant coaches.
Okay. Now, that being the case, and with the ideal of having one or more assistant coaches who are capable of pushing or being some sort of expert in a specific area, how do you develop the staff or manage the staff in a way that brings that out?
That's a really good question, a really difficult one, because the non-professional, the guy who's there to help out his local club is much less likely and perhaps much less qualified at that level to make really strong judgments or have really strong opinions. And they're also not always willing to rock the boat, so to speak. And a coach, assistant that I worked with recently, he, while he was an experienced coach, it took a long time for him to feel comfortable in actually giving his opinion. And I think that's also a function of a lot of head coaches. They don't seek the real opinions of others. They want people to agree with them so they feel comfortable with their decisions, but are much less happy with being challenged. And it's a human trait that people seek comfort and calm rather than seek chaos and challenge, and perhaps that's why Vital has been so successful in his career.
Okay. Circling back to what you said about there not being a real career path for assistant coaches, as you said, in the States, you can be a quote-unquote professional assistant, and there are some people who have made their living being assistant coaches and haven't really had, at least from an external perspective, haven't seemed to have had the interest in becoming a head coach, or maybe just didn't want to leave where they were at and they were quite happy with their circumstance. So basically what you're saying is if you're an assistant coach and you have aspirations of moving on to bigger and better things, then the path is going to be not to progress to a higher level of assistant coach, you know, either within your domestic league or, as you've done in a certain case, move to a higher level competitive league in a different country. But it's more likely going to take becoming a head coach at some level and then moving up from there. Is that fair?
The few people that would choose coaching as a profession in large areas of Europe are looking for an assistant position, perhaps as a stepping stone, and nothing more. But even then, if you take out, I think Italy, where they have a strong history of professionalism in coaching, even then, there are so few professional coaches, period, that even a younger coach who chose the path to be a professional would be able to have a head coaching position at a relatively early point in their careers, in a lower league, for example, where they had the chance to build up in that way.
All right. That actually brings up something that I think Mick Haley mentioned in terms of just overall coaching development. Because he said even if you're an assistant coach for some college program in the States, he would strongly advise, you know, these young coaches to get out and get head coaching experience in some fashion, which is relatively easy to do in the U.S. because the college season and the junior season are not, you know, concurrent. So somebody can coach their college team in, speaking to the women's side of things, in the fall, and then through the winter and spring can go coach a local juniors club and get that head coaching experience. A little bit trickier in the European structure, unless you're talking about an assistant coach who, as we kind of talked about before, is also the second team coach or the juniors coach or something along those lines, right?
I think the structures are so different that it's almost impossible to compare. In the US, there are so many areas of competition, whether it's club competition, high school, college, junior college, and they're all a little bit different. They can run, in a sense, alongside each other. Whereas in Europe, every country has essentially the same system of divisions 1 through 6, based on a single club with its own juniors, etc. So there's no opportunity to work in juniors in one club and seniors in another. For example, you're always stuck. But there are advantages in that system as well, but stuck in one club, one situation.
Okay, well, just for clarity's sake, you can't generally coach in the same gender a college team and a high school team or something along those lines. Never mind the fact that they're in the same season. It's just not allowed in certain cases.
I was thinking more of the club, the situation in the U.S., that you can work in college and in a club.
Or you could coach different genders. So you could coach women's college and boys' high school, since those are alternating seasons, or vice versa, boys' men's college and girls' high school. And I've known coaches done that. So, yeah, you're right. The way the schedules are structured in the States provides a bit more opportunity to coach more teams. Although that being said, there do seem to be more opportunities to coach at the national team level in Europe, because most of that work seems to happen outside of the normal club structure.
Perhaps the point that I was thinking about was the links between things. In the United States, particularly the club system I'm thinking about, is completely separate from all the school versions, the high school, junior college, college. So there's a big separation there, whereas in Europe, everything is linked together. The clubs are linked together with each other in leagues that run, like I said, from top to bottom, 1 to 8, or 7 or 12, or depending on the country. So I think that's the difference there. The point you make, where there is no link, is correct. There is no direct link between clubs and national teams, and the club and national team seasons run not completely but typically separate from each other, although the opportunities to coach national teams are restricted to a relatively small number of coaches.
Within a country. But there are a lot more countries.
In general.
I'm just thinking, you know, if you're a coach in the U.S., there's only one national team program, and there's 50 states. Whereas in Europe, you've got many national team programs because there are many states. So,
yes,
on a strict numbers basis, there are more coaching opportunities in Europe. But that's not a major point. What sorts of things, as a head coach, do you find that you do and that you can do to help develop the coaches that you are allowed to and have the opportunity to bring in as assistants, to get them to the point where they can, you know, push back or offer new ideas or whatever the case may be?
It's not that that easy to manage to create that situation. As I said, a lot of assistants come in to the situation not looking to do that, and as to come in as a help, as an assistant coach rather than as a assistant coach. Different emphasis on different parts of the title. The only thing that you can do in the end is just encourage that feedback. And as I said, my last assistant, it took pretty much a whole season before he really felt comfortable with that role. And obviously, our working environment became much. Well, working environment, our working situation became much better when we were able to achieve that. And I say we because it's not just a matter of him changing. And that's the main thing, is just to keep encouraging, give jobs, give tasks to the assistant that are valuable for the team, not just time-wasting tasks, because there are plenty of those as well. Maybe it takes time and that to create that environment.
All right, well, circling back to kind of the original idea of being able to give control away or give access or input or whatever away, do you think most coaches, and this isn't just volleyball, but most coaches in general tend to be control freaks?
I think that most coaches become coaches exactly because they're control freaks. And they, at some point, they want to control every small detail. And that makes it very difficult to work with an assistant to provide to create that environment where an assistant's input is valued. And if you add to the control aspect that that it's not just being a control freak in a professional situation, the job is not a very stable job, and there's also the control in many situations can hide a sense of fear or trepidation that the assistant could work against that coach, or it is the case sometimes that the assistant coach works for the club in the negative sense. He's the guy who reports on the coach to the president. There are certainly those kinds of situations as well. So it's a difference between the real world and the theoretical world, I guess. And the coach.
To that point, you do hear stories about assistant coaches who intentionally, or maybe unintentionally, undermine the head coach, and part of it may be related to it being assistant coaches being more, I don't know, career oriented than what you've said in terms of the European assistants, and that they think, like going back to the whole idea of they want control, they think they can do a better job than the current head coach. Chances are they're probably not right because they're young and inexperienced and whatever, yeah. You know, full of themselves. But you do hear stories about assistant coaches who, whether it be with the players or whether it be with the administration, in some fashion, have sought to undermine their boss, which obviously brings up the idea of loyalty, which I know came up. Forgetting which interview it was, but we've talked about, you know, what are the good qualities or what are the best qualities to have as an assistant coach, and loyalty was very much right at the top of the list.
Could it have been the Mick Haley interview? I was thinking the same thing.
It might have been.
Go ahead. The head coach has to have the loyalty of the assistant. The coach, the coaching staff, and this is the same in the team, and this is probably a word that will come up a thousand times in the course of the interviews, and is one of trust. And just as there has to be trust within a team and trust between the coach and the players, there has to be trust within the staff. And the environment is such that the head coach has to trust that the assistant will not will pass on his message to the team, but also in a sense to management, and that the what happens in the coach's room stays in the coach's room, if you want to put it like that. And that's, you'll hear often from coaches in different sports, if you read the read different literatures, and they say, what's the first thing that you look for in an assistant coach? I've heard it more than once that the first answer is somebody who doesn't want my job, and that if the person wants your job, then you have to fire them straight away. That's the first order of business of the relationship between the head coach and the assistant.
Right. On to your point about things staying in the coach's room, one of the things that I've always spoken with assistant coaches when I was assistant or when I was a head coach or whatever was, you always, as a staff, present a united front. It's kind of like being parents. You can't contradict each other, and it goes both ways. The head coach can't, you know, be out there contradicting the assistant coach in a public fashion, because that destabilizes the assistant coach's relationship with the team just as much as if you went the other way and the assistant coach was the one contradicting the head coach. So it's a two-way street. Loyalty works both ways.
Absolutely. And I've worked in situations where the head coach has I'm not quite sure of a political way to put this, but pulled me down in front of the team, and this is absolutely the wrong way to work with an assistant. So whatever happens has to happen in the coach's room, and what happens in the coach's room has to stay there.
Okay, we're winding down on time. Any final thoughts?
No, I think the topic of the assistant is a good one. I think to go back to the original point, this speaks a lot to Vital and Vital's success, that he's not only able to manage this but actively seeks it out. And I think that it's a great advice for all the coaches who are listening to this.
All right. We'll wrap it up there.
Thanks for listening. We hope you enjoyed this episode. For show notes and more, visit volleyballcoachingwizards.com/podcast. Got an idea for a future episode or want to ask a question? Send an email to podcast@volleyballcoachingwizards.com.